from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Has anyone at work ever yelled at you, bullied you, or tried to get you fired? If your answer is yes, help is on the way. We have Stanford Management Professor Bob Sutton on the show, who has a new book out. It's called The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. It gives advice on how to outsmart and disarm coworkers or bosses who try to bring you down. Join us next, right after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Queena Kim, in for Michael Krasny. If you are dealing with a toxic personality at work, someone who belittles you or maybe shouts at you in the office, Robert Sutton might have the answers for you on how to fight back. The Stanford Professor of Management Science and Engineering has written a new book out, and we can't say its title, but it's basically The Jerk's Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. He says sometimes a boss or a coworker or customer can leave you feeling, as he puts it, demeaned, de-energized, and or disrespected, or treats you as being less than a human being. If you've ever been made to feel that way, this is the show for you. Bob Sutton is here with us in this studio, and he's going to offer us some tips on avoiding or outsmarting workplace bullies and what signs you should look for so you don't hire them. He's speaking at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco on October 2nd at 6 p.m. Bob Sutton, welcome to Forum.
It's great to be here, Queena.
So I think we should sort of start up that this book follows up on a famous book that you wrote, which we can't also say the title to, but it's basically the No Jerks Rule in the Workplace.
Yes.
You want to just give us a quick preface
or
sure. You know, tell us what that was about?
So the main focus of the No A Blank 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 Rule book that I wrote in 2007 was on how to build a relatively jerk-free workplace. Mm-hmm. So how to avoid hiring them, how to change their behavior, how to root them out, and so on. But in the process, I didn't really expect to get the reaction that I did, which was people sent me zillions of emails with their problems. Every time I had a social conversation, people would ask me the same question. And the question was essentially, I'm dealing with a jerk or a bunch of them. What do I do? And the range was staggering. Everything from Costco workers, actually to a lot of people in your business, I hate to tell you, in the media business. And even one CEO, I hope I can use these words, wrote me about the problems with board holes that he was having, the nasty board members. And they were all the same question. And so I spent some time both pursuing the academic literature, which is actually very large on all things jerk, shall we say, to try to figure out what some of the problems and solutions were, and also went through my emails and practical examples to try to answer the question.
Yeah, I thought one of the funniest ones was, how do I keep mean people from volunteering? So it was even in
a
volunteer setting, right, where one toxic person can just set the whole I guess, an endeavor in sort of a bad direction.
Yeah.
But I sort of wanted to start with, I love how you start the book, with one of the anecdotes you start the book with. And that is, it's about a young tech CEO who's worried that he's not Steve Jobs enough. And by that, he's not meaning that he's not being a visionary, but that he feels like he's too calm and he tries to treat people with too much respect or with, you know, certain civility. And I found that interesting because I do hear that a lot, that, you know, sure, it's nice, it's good to be nice, but you really can't get the rewards or have a really competitive workplace if you're a nice person.
Well, there's a difference between being nice and being a doormat and being a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm talking about is treating people in a way that leaves them feeling demeaned and disrespected. And despite the mythology of Steve Jobs and other people, the evidence is that, especially if you want to lead a collaborative company, that it's not going to work. And by the way that story ends is that I had multiple conversations with Ed Catmull, who leads Pixar and met Steve Jobs for 25 years. And his argument was when Steve became a more collaborative, cooperative person.
Was when he was booted and came back?
Yep.
Because
Ed described it, he went through the wilderness after 10 years and he came back. And it's not like Steve Jobs was a doormat, but he became a more civilized person. And also that CEO who I can't name, but he's done just fine. He's still civilized and his company's about ready to go to do very well. I better be careful with that. I would also go back to the notion that if you treat other people like dirt, even if you get ahead in a kind of I win, you lose game, the evidence is you're probably going to create a more destructive workplace. And also, and the evidence is overwhelming, you're going to have negative effects on people's mental health, on their physical health, on their productivity and their creativity. So from my perspective, since there are many examples and evidence that you can succeed as a civilized human being, that if you're a jerk and a winner, you're a loser in my book because you're doing so much damage to humanity and probably to your organization.
But why does that myth endure? I mean, you see it over and over again, right? Like, have you seen that movie Whiplash? It was basically the young musician who doesn't become great until he basically has a mentor slash conductor.
And he breaks down at
the end, and he's
destroyed.
Okay. Yeah. And it's what's so interesting to me is I think we love movies like that, and yet most people who've been in those workplaces, I would say, don't feel that creative, don't feel that productive, and are often just sort of scared and feeling a little freaked out.
So it might work in certain short-term situations. And let's just face it, somebody screaming, yelling, swearing is actually really entertaining. But again, if you look at the evidence, on average, people don't get ahead. The notion that time wounds all heals is supported by much more evidence than the notion that being nasty helps. And if we see what's happening in a number of the organizations with the real jerks, I mean, Travis didn't do too well at Uber.
Right. He was the CEO who was ousted from Uber for, in part, creating a toxic work environment where, I guess, what did Arianna Huffington, one of the board members, call it? They upheld brilliant jerks.
Yeah, no, which to me, and there's different ways to define it. One of the things that's really important and something that a lot of companies, including Microsoft, have worked with is the question of what is a star. And some organizations, if you're in an organization that defines a star as somebody who squishes others on the way to the top, well, I guess that's how you're supposed to behave. But even Microsoft has gotten changed their culture away from nastiness to get ahead. And I would also add, just to go back, there are the lion's share of organizations that are successful reward cooperative rather than backstabbing behavior because that's what's most effective. So you look at Netflix, I've mentioned Pixar. Apple, Steve Jobs aside, is actually a pretty cooperative place. And so anytime Facebook, anytime that you do collaborative work that requires cooperation, that treating people with respect is probably a better way to go. And gee, by the way, you're not going to drive them out and make them sick.
If we take the assumption that it is good to have a jerk-free work environment, there's still the unfortunate fact that there are jerks amongst us, and sometimes they seep through, or sometimes the company fosters that sort of spirit. And this book is about how do we, I guess, survive that. So the first thing you say is we have to sort of really honestly assess whether this person is a jerk before you describe your course of action. So walk that through that step for me.
Well, if somebody is a jerk to me, there's three kinds of different behaviors that I would look for, rough categories. One is the classic kind of yelling at people, glaring at you, really open disrespect. That's one thing that might lead you to feel demeaned and de-energized. The second one is backstabbing. In fact, some of the most skilled and dangerous jerks in the workplace are the people who grin really nicely and they put the knife in. And those are much more complicated to deal with. And the last ones are the ones who treat you as if you're invisible or if you're nothing, as if you just don't exist. So there are different kinds of jerks and perhaps different sorts of tactics. But the fundamental problem is if you're constantly facing somebody who leaves you feeling bad and feeling like dirt, you might take some responsibility for it. It might be because you're thin-skinned. It might be because you're throwing mud at them and they're throwing mud back at you. But if you're feeling that way constantly, you've got a problem. You've got to work on your environment and yourself, probably.
So I think you try to suss out, like, there's a little bit of a fine line here because sometimes it really is that other person.
Right.
But you need to take a little bit of self-inventory, too, to figure out whether it might be you or it is that other person.
Yeah, I would say a big self-inventory. There's very good research on things they call it self-enhancement bias, for example, that we tend to, if you will, think much of ourselves and maybe less of others. So my mental provisioning for the book is to be slow to label other people as part of the problem or the jerk and fast to label yourself because there's so many biases that point the other direction. So yes, having people, especially in your life, who can tell you the truth about when you've been a jerk is a really important thing if you're going to deal with this problem.
And you have a wonderful anecdote in this book about Winston Churchill's wife checking him about, I guess she had heard many feelings from folks, the people that he worked with, that he was not a very pleasant person to work with and very difficult and sort of a jerk. And she writes in this letter where she checks him. You want to talk about that story?
Oh, yeah. So it's actually, so this is June 1940. Absolutely the darkest hour of World War II for the UK. I mean, if you had that job, you would be pretty stressed out, too. And that's before the U.S. came in the war and Germany was just beating them up. And so what happened is his wife, Clementine, wrote him a letter that as you describe, said that he wasn't as kind as he used to be. And she also had an addendum in that letter that was really interesting, which was she said, if you continue to treat the men around you like that, they will be afraid to challenge you and they will be afraid to think critically and will give you blind loyalty. And I think that's really quite interesting because it gets to some of the negative effects of being a boss who is a jerk. Not only do you make people sick and make them suffer, they're afraid to challenge you. They're afraid to think more creatively. And she had this whole sort of mini theory about when you're a jerk boss, it not only makes people sick, it undermines their effectiveness and truthfulness.
We are speaking to Bob Sutton. He has a new book out called, The Jerk's Survival Guide. We can't say the actual title here, but it's basically about how to survive a toxic workplace. We're going to be opening up the phones for your calls. And you could also email us at kqedforum.com. Let's find out a little bit about, you talk about a little bit about the questions, once you decide that somebody is a jerk, how do you avoid them or techniques to sort of protect yourself? One of them was keep your distance. And I'm wondering if you could describe that one.
So the evidence is, well, first of all, if you can't escape, the best thing to do is get out. If you got a client, if you can fire that client or quit that client, bless you, you've avoided that sort of toxic interaction. But if in your life, but if you're in a situation where you're in a workplace where there's some flexibility, if there's a nasty person or a nasty group, there's actually some great recent social network analysis that shows, this is done in open offices, that if you are within 25 feet of a jerk in an open office, nice longitudinal study, number one, because it's contagious, you're more likely to become a jerk. Number two, you're more likely to be fired. And so if you take that notion, if you can just get a little further away from that person, you will literally lose the toxicity. And the evidence about being in close proximity in the workplace, people who sit close to each other, they even do more work together over email. So it isn't just an in-person sort of thing. So that's one of the things that I talk about in terms of having distance. Also, some of the organizations that I've studied and worked with have what I call early jerk warning systems. That's when, for example, you call the boss's assistant to see what kind of mood he or she is in to protect yourself.
Okay.
Or that the person is coming into your office and to pretend that you're doing the right thing.
We're going to open up the phone lines. We're talking to Bob Sutton. He's a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford. He's written a book about surviving toxic personalities in the workplace. If you want to call us, you can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to us at forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Bob Sutton, you mentioned this thing called the Allen curve, and it's sort of, I guess, research about this whole idea of keep your distance, because it's such a cliche. As you mentioned, though, that it can have really bad effects in the workplace. But tell me about this Allen curve.
Well, the Allen curve, which is also similar to this research on the notion that if you're within 25 feet of a toxic person, it gets even worse. This is classic research from the 70s done at MIT by Tom Allen. And essentially what he showed is, if you can get 60 feet away from someone, you'll have almost no interaction from them. If you can get 150 feet away from them, you might as well live in a different country.
Wow.
And so it's called propinquity is what the research is. But it's this really powerful effect. But that's not the only way to reduce interaction. Another thing that you see even in meetings, for those of us who go to meetings with known jerks, there's other ways to reduce contact. One, Steve Jobs, who I already said got better, but I teach Stanford executives, and I had this one come up to me and describe working with Jobs for years. And he said, so it wasn't a joke. You really would not get on an elevator with him. And he said when he went to meetings with him, he would look to see where Jobs was sitting and would sit as far away as possible, because if you sat next to him, the odds that you would be working 2 or 3 days for 24 hours are really high. So I sort of like that sort of notion that even figuring out how to get to the place where they can't see you will help. And obviously, to go back to the larger picture, these are situations where you can't escape the person. We haven't talked about confronting the jerk, mm-hmm. or fighting back against the jerk. And there's other methods you can use that don't entail avoiding, if you will, contact with them. There's kind of mind tricks or reframing techniques so that they hurt you less.
Well, you know, I really like that anecdote about keeping your distance, because I feel like it's something that intuitively people feel. And yet if they're your superior or somebody, you feel this need to you almost feel like it's a cop-out to try and keep that distance. But according to your book, there's actually research to show that this is an effective strategy, and you shouldn't feel bad about it necessarily.
Well I mean, you do have to you do have to balance. One of my heroes of the book was, in my field, a former doctoral student who had a really, really nasty advisor, and he was kind of had a Machiavellian personality, and people like that, when they see you squirm or are uncomfortable, the pleasure centers in their brains light up, essentially. He would call her in the 3 a.m. to yell at her. He would send her nasty emails. And she developed what I call the rhythm method to avoid the frequency and intensity of contact. She'd wait till he sent 10, 12, 15 nasty emails, respond to one. He wanted to meet every week. She pushed it to 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And she believes, she's now a tenured professor at a prestigious university, if she hadn't developed these techniques both to reward him less and to reduce the amount of contact she had with him, she doesn't believe she would have made it. And again, we're talking about people who don't have a lot of power and aren't in ideal situations. And we should also talk about ways to get more power to fight back.
Yeah.
But sometimes some of us are stuck in situations where there's no choice and we can't escape.
Yeah, but that technique you just talked about is slowing the rhythm, right?
Right.
So not letting the bully control the interaction, but trying to take a deep breath and figuring out a way to disrupt their rhythm and put them on your time scale. But we got a call here from Daniel in Berkeley. Daniel, you're on Forum. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Daniel. Hello. Yeah.
Oh, hey. My name is Daniel, and I've had kind of the same issue. I work in healthcare, so I don't work in tech. But I feel like a lot of the things that I'm listening to on the news are kind of very similar to healthcare. And when I've brought these things up to HR, you know, regarding, you know, toxic environments, it kind of gets buried deeper and deeper. And, you know, with these bosses that we have, people, they're known individuals that are very toxic, but nobody ever wants to talk about them. And it's been the biggest hassle of like trying to figure out, you know, to break through that old stereotypes and actually talking about it.
Yeah. And I guess that brings up what you were trying to flick at before, which is it's all good to sort of ignore people if they're not that powerful or maybe lateral to you. What do you do when it's your boss and everybody else who can check your boss has their head in the sand?
Yeah, so that's a big problem. And by the way, since the caller is in healthcare is actually a classic toxic environment, because when you have big power differences, when you have time pressure, this is the classic situation where you're going to get nasty behavior. And although it's sort of interesting, this is a case where, in theory, it seems like if you have the documentation, and there's something called the Joint Commission, which provides accreditation for all U.S. hospitals. In theory, if you work in a toxic hospital, their accreditation is at risk. But
if
it's
a toxic environment,
yeah, this is new. About 7 or 8 years, 2008, they installed this, but. This is sort of the problem, is that although I do encourage people to document and go to HR, but there are many times when HR is not your friend. And the other thing, and I hate to bring this up, but I keep looking, but apparently it is not unlawful to be an equal opportunity jerk in any state in the United States. So if they're sexist, if they're racist, if they're ageist, it's actually against the law. But if you've got an equal opportunity jerk for a boss,
those things, then it's
okay.
Pass?
And it's actually one of the legal defenses
really?
That has been used is no, I wasn't racist. I was nasty to everybody. So to go back to the caller, and I think that the caller has an interesting question. In that case, and I've done a lot of stuff in healthcare, a lot of times the best thing that you can do to fight back against a boss or a difficult environment is essentially to form a posse, which is like-minded people who will both help you document your case, who will protect you politically, and that's very often the best that you can do. The other thing you can do, if you're in a large system, very often there's a lot of evidence that in all organizations that there are, if you will, good bosses and nasty bosses, and good workers, work groups and bad work groups. If you can transfer to another work group, sometimes that also can help. But it's very difficult in healthcare just because there's so much pressure, so many mm-hmm. power differences, and then the regulations just drive everybody just nuts. So healthcare is a difficult environment.
So I guess one of the ideas is to document, and that can sort of take you some part, but you also have just to find allies within your peer group to try to figure out how to do it as a team. We have another question here.
Sure.
Mary writes, what do you think about favoritism in the workplace? Seems like that creates a toxic environment. We got like a minute for that, but like
favoritism is, I'm sorry, absolutely inevitable.
Yeah, because you know, if you are
life
a boss,
isn't fair.
Right? But when does it tip? I get that, because if there's somebody who's a great worker, you know, it's just a human reaction. But when does it tip to being toxic?
Well, to me, it starts tipping to being toxic where you are ignored, you are treated badly. You are treated with disrespect. And in that case, when there's favoritism, to me, if the formal channels don't work, then you've got to start doing stuff like forming some allies, and also sort of make an assessment. How much is it me mm-hmm. versus how much is it that the environment is unfair?
We are talking to Bob Sutton. He's a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford. He's written a new book about surviving toxic personalities in the workplace and how to deal with people who treat you like dirt. If you have any questions or you're in this situation, you should give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. He's going to be with us in the next part of the show. And I'm Queen of Kim. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Queenie Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. And here in the studio with us is Bob Sutton. He has a new book out on how to deal with toxic personalities in the workplace. He's a professor of management and science engineering at Stanford, and he's here to answer some of your questions. You can do that by calling us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or you can call us, you can email us on forum at kqed.org, or you can tweet at us. We're at KQED Forum. So let's go to some of these comments here, Bob. And we have Patrick here, and he writes, I've worked for many companies, both giant Bay Area firms and small startups. Many CEOs and managers I've I've seen be jerks have never seen it affect the success of the company in any way, except for the fact that I've stopped working with them. I think that many companies are simply so profitable and the management style makes virtually no difference that there's no corrective, you know, measure to this, and no one will ever change. That sort of seems to contradict exactly what you're saying.
But
you know, there are some fabulously, like, I mean, Uber is one example of them, right? It did implode, but it is one of the most valuable companies.
My perspective is, if you kind of look at the situation that we're in now, and by the way, the evidence that they do implode is actually quite high. But if you look at the situation we're in with United Airlines, with Uber, we're sort of reaching this point where, in part, this is the upside of social media, that that people who treat people with extreme disrespect are a problem. The other thing that's interesting is that the writer has left a lot of companies. The evidence is, since there's a war for talent in the Bay Area, that if you treat people like dirt, especially younger people, by the way, who just aren't going to take it, that that the companies will lose their best employees. And, you know, not to bash Uber too much, I think that they're not particularly special in how nasty they are. But I teach in the Stanford Engineering School. And long before they got in trouble, at least every woman I knew who was technically skilled said they'd never go to work for Uber because they knew of the environment. So there is a cost, and there's lots of organizations that can get ahead by treating people with respect. And the thing that I would argue for those CEOs who maybe get ahead and are jerks anyways, my perspective is, if you do that, you are doing damage to other human beings. And there's plenty of evidence that companies can succeed with respectful environments. So just as a human being, you're still a loser as a human being. And why are you doing that to people and causing so much damage to other people if you can still win by not treating them like dirt?
But that sort of assumes that person cares that they are creating damage to other people, right? And sometimes you see these narcissistic personalities that that are either unaware or really don't have the capacity to feel.
We can talk about narcissism. Yeah. Narcissism is really interesting, and I'm going to stay away from politics mostly. But the evidence about narcissistic leaders is really interesting, which is that they tend to make an initial impression, and over time they wear badly and they get worse and worse over time in terms of their endorsement and effectiveness. So from my perspective, there's lots of evidence that in the end, that go to this point, time wounds all heals. Wounds all heals.
I really mean
time wounds all heals, which is a Groucho Marx line. But also go back to if you're like the caller and you're at a company where people treat you like dirt, let's just say that you're working for Donald Trump. And let's even assume what he does is effective, which I don't believe it is. You have got a problem that you've got to sort of deal with this crazy person every day to protect your mental health, to get your job done, and to protect your reputation. And so the fact is that even if we concede, which I do not, that jerks finish first, mm-hmm. which is kind of making the jerks. And by the way, the evidence, you look at the weight of the evidence that jerks finish first is really low. The opposite tends to happen. But even if we concede that, the fact is, if you are working with someone like that, you are suffering and you've got a problem you've got to deal with.
Let's go to a call now. We've got Michelle in San Jose. Michelle, welcome to Forum.
Hi, I happen to work in healthcare also, but
a lot of healthcare calls.
tough environment.
We deal with a lot of people, and we have to be very careful and deal with patients that are jerks and mm-hmm. able to deal with that. But one of the things that I see is that there's a lot of reasons behind the jerkiness, and that there is an inner jerk in all of us, and that labeling toxicity creates kind of a social group dynamic that kind of makes it more permanent and doesn't allow that person to gain the skills. And doesn't it seem that these people, the managers, the coworkers, are just not skillful? They don't have the people skills.
Bob Sutton, you actually addressed that in your book, right?
This is a great point. And that's one of the reasons that I argue, number one, most of the time people are jerks. They are temporary jerks because of the difficult situation they're in. And number two, and I think the caller knocked it, when you start labeling somebody as especially a certified or permanent jerk, you create a self-fulfilling prophecy where you don't sort of get in there and cool them out. And a lot of times when you, and I'm thinking of healthcare environment in particular, when you've got somebody who's yelling at you, somebody who's upset, who's complaining about you, if you have some empathy for them, that if you give them some love, some affection, and some caring, and you do some favors for them, you will bring them to your side. But having empathy is important. At the same time, every healthcare worker that I know practices the fine art of emotional detachment, because honestly, sometimes it's them, it is not you. And that ability to sort of do the job and at the same time sort of emotionally detached from the difficult patient, the difficult coworker, or the difficult surgeon. Surgeons can just be terrible because of the amount of power they have and also performance pressure. But to go back to the caller's point, the notion that when you've got a jerk, and that's why I say sort of know your jerk, having some empathy for that person can be really important. And the fact is that there are some people who are all jerks all the time. And that's another kind of situation you got to deal with, too.
Let's go to another call here because we got a lot of them. We've got Aaron in San Francisco. Aaron, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thank you.
What do you got on your mind?
So this was something that happened to me several years ago. I was working in a nonprofit arts organization, and I had one fellow employee who was a lateral employee, didn't have any real authority over me, but she was always just really mean and a jerk to me all the time. And one day she was yelling at me about something that my supervisor had asked me to do, and it was just another instance of her doing this. And I just stopped her, and I said, look, I'm a human being, and you can't talk to me like that. I'm following the orders of my supervisor, and if you have a problem with her, with that, you can talk to her, but I just want you to know that I'm a person, and you can't talk to me like that. And she broke down. She sobbed. She hugged me and told me that she hated her job and was incredibly nice to me after that. And it was, and even now, I always felt very uncomfortable about it, but I ran into her not that long ago at having lunch, and it was the same thing, just overly nice and unbelievable. It was, I was so shocked by that. And I've used that, you know, in other instances to great effect in the years following, and I was just so surprised by it.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing your story. Do you have any thoughts on that, Baba?
So I think this is a lovely story, and to me, it illustrates that a lot of times when people are nasty to us, one of the things we've got to figure out, or in this case, kind of guess, is the person sort of clueless and unaware of how they're coming across to others? There's a lot of evidence that a lot of us are clueless about how we make others feel. And then there's actually strategic jerks who are doing it on purpose. But what you had here is somebody who, when you gave her the awareness of what she was doing, it had a really positive effect. And by the way, it's funny because you keep talking about jerky CEOs. One of my favorite stories is I know quite well a guy who is CEO of a large effective organization that was about ready to go public, but he kept insulting his board, and he would use vegetable insults. He'd say, "You're dumber than a head of lettuce. The average zucchini could figure that out." But he didn't realize how bad he was being. So what they did one day was he went into the boardroom and there was heads of lettuce with hats on instead of actually having him there.
And did he get it?
He got it, and you know, and he didn't become the nicest, most sweet guy. But he said, I didn't realize the degree to which I was upsetting them, and by having it delivered as a joke, it worked. So this is, again, know your jerk. This is a kind of ex-military kind of jovial joking guy. In this case, it seems like a different emotional strategy. But starting out with the assumption that the person doesn't understand how they're coming across and is overly nasty is important. But I would go back to the point that there are a fair number of jerks out there, and these are Machiavellian jerks in particular, who take pleasure from
your
pain.
Calculated in their jerkiness.
In their jerkiness,
for a certain purpose.
Or they have pushed the point, which I believe you have pushed too hard, that jerks finish first. And so they start doing it. And in that case, using a power play against them and really pushing back and porcupine power is probably most effective. So that's why I get back to the notion of know your jerk. But I love the caller's example, because I think you start by assuming the best, Yeah. And then when that doesn't work, well, you got to start mobilizing to fight or get out or protect yourself.
Well, it reminds me, as reporters, we often get really, or not often, every once in a while, we get very nasty emails from mm-hmm. people. But if you just write them back and say, hey, that's, you know, I hear that concern, and how can we address it? The email you get yep. back is super civil and friendly, and, you know, it's just sort of breaking through that shell and letting that person know, I don't know, that you're human, that you acknowledge that they're human.
And I would also add that there's an argument, and this is the when they go low, we go high strategy. There is an argument that when people are treating you like dirt, that a reason to protect yourself emotionally, to be a civilized human being, is that way you can provide some distance and say, I'm not going to sink to their level. So we're in San Francisco at Phil's Coffee, and we did some mm-hmm. interviews for the book. And the mm-hmm. philosophy of Phil's Coffee is, if you get a nasty customer, you kill them with kindness. One, because it's their philosophy to serve cups of love. The other thing is that when they have a nasty customer, they think that they shouldn't sink to their level. They should be above that. So there's lots
it's sort of being like that firewall in what you're talking about, how toxicity can sort of spread. But you've sort of maintained that firewall by keeping a more elevated demeanor.
Yeah.
And we have another question here from, or I guess a caller here. It's Amelia in Oakland. Amelia, welcome to Forum.
Hi, Bob.
Hi Amelia.
Tina. Our sons went to high school together back in the day.
Oh, so my God. Hi.
Huge fan of your work ever since. And my question, at the risk of straying into politics, is it is evident that there are many heads of state and elected officials, from Kim Jong-un to the President of the United States, who are jerks. And what can the voters do to foresee that this would be the case and avoid electing these people? Well, I can take my question off.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a tough question. I don't know whether I could fix either one of those. But the one thing that I would say, and it's interesting who we just had as our prior guest.
Yeah.
Is that when I think of situations like that, I don't know how to stop nuclear war. But the thing that I think of when I think of somebody like being around Trump is, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, which is dangerous, and assumed he wanted to be less of a jerk, because apparently he's been upset lately because he's discovered that
he's
people hate
bad
me.
Media coverage.
He's upset that people hate him. So what might he do? He might do things to do a little mood control type stuff. So one thing I suggested is that he not allowed to tweet unless he's had at least 8 hours sleep. That would be a good thing. If he had somebody in his life, like Winston Churchill's wife, who could sort of warn him when he's being a jerk. And then the other thing, and this has to do with the toxicity, and maybe some of this is happening with Kelly, and believe me, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm trying to be optimistic just for our nation. I noticed that Kelly is trying to keep the people away from him who spread the toxicity because it's so dangerous. So when I look at a situation, both for the mental health of the people around somebody who is toxic, especially narcissistic, that you really got to figure out how to design the group of people around them. And it's tough. He's got the classic narcissism problem in that relationships with narcissists get worse and worse over time. Mm-hmm. And eventually they either they are kicked out for not kissing up constantly, or because they feel like they're betrayed. It's a classic narcissist problem.
We're talking to Bob Sutton. He's a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford, and he's written a new book about surviving toxic personalities in the workplace and how to deal with people who treat you like dirt. If you want to ask him a question, you can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And we've actually got some questions here that came in through online. And Kay asks, is there any evidence that empathy, mindfulness, and other kinds of training help in promoting better workplace environments? So I assume that that's not necessarily just for the jerk in the room, but does it help if, like, you know, the other people in the office have created an atmosphere where these things are seen positively, or people are asked
So the evidence essentially is that positive and negative emotions are contagious. So if you fill your organization with a bunch of people who are jerks, and by the way, the evidence is jerks hire jerks, and it's contagious. So you and negative emotions are more contagious than positive emotions. But to the extent that you can create an environment where people are rewarded for being civilized and punished for being nasty, you will get a more civilized workplace. And you ask me, so one of the heroes of my book, his name is Paul Purcell. He's CEO of a company called Baird, very successful financial services firm. They're number four in the best place to work list. And he has a philosophy, and I won't use the A word. He says they have the no, how do I say
no
this?
No jerk rule.
Thank you for saving me from the FCC. And they have the no jerk rule, although he doesn't use that word. And he tells people during a job interview, if I discover you're a jerk, I'm going to fire you. And there are other organizations that actually do have control. And on the other side, it turns out the same studies that show that if you sit near a jerk, you become one, are more likely to be mm-hmm. fired. If you sit next to a civilized, competent person or a group of them, you're more likely to catch that good stuff, too. So the contagiousness of emotion and competence is very important.
So there is some evidence that inserting that kind of mindfulness and whatever, no matter what level you're at, can have some effect.
Yes.
Let's go to a call here. We have Sue from Mill Valley. Sue, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thank you. I enjoy everything you're saying, and I've experienced it myself for many years, especially at sea level. And I'm sure you're familiar with the psychopath test, which apparently many C-level executives qualify as psychopaths. And I've certainly seen that because they seem to be very singularly focused. But on the other hand as well, I've seen a lot of people exercise a kind of hypersensitivity, almost as if they're looking for being wounded or insulted or to take umbrage. And there's a lot of that that goes on as well around language especially. And so how do we ameliorate that and create an environment where we encourage inclusivity and awareness rather than exclusion and ostracizing people?
And yeah, and I think that is a question that we've another way that I've heard it framed here is, you know, when does, like, sometimes you want to be give a critique or be
right.
critical of something so you can get better. And yet, as the caller mentioned, people are oversensitive to that, or they don't. So how do you manage that sort of line?
Well, I think we're sort of drifting into what. So a friend of mine, Kim Scott, wrote a book called Radical Candor, which is a great book.
Okay.
And she has a great line, which is, so this is how to tell people the truth without being a jerk and hurting their
right.
feeling. And her perspective is, and this is where the empathy does matter, is that it happens at the receiver's ear, not at your mouth. So this is, I go back to the know your jerk or just know your colleague's really important. There's something else the caller said that's really important about what she's calling the psychopathology of senior management. And this is something that's in the book. I have a McKinsey Quarterly article that just came out on this. One of the things that people who get power have to be really sensitive about is we have excellent research that independently of their enduring personality, when you put people in positions of power, they become more focused on their own needs, less focused on the needs of others. They act like the rules don't apply to them, and they treat other people as objects rather than having empathy for them. And this is so for leaders, this is why it's so important to have people in their lives who can sort of calm them down. And so you're talking about Steve Jobs. He did get better. One reason, he had a great guy named Bill Campbell who was famous for being the CEO whisperer
mm-hmm.
who would
call him on his stuff, sort of give him guidance,
and so that's the most important thing that especially senior executives can have. And certainly on the thin skinness, there are some of us who are thin skinned, and especially narcissists, by the way. So once again, having people in your life to say, "No, I think you are overreacting." In this case, I think that you're having a problem. So I think it's actually really important to do that.
We have another comment here. It says, a listener asks, are consumer good or luxury industries less toxic? Say companies focused on clothing or travel. Seems like people shopping or traveling would be generally happy. I'm going to leave that one and go to the next one because I know people who work in retail, and I can tell you
that the airline industry
is the worst.
There's
a lot of intense pressure there to deliver.
No.
And I think it creates the same kind of toxic environment. Ben writes, when is it okay to flip on the perpetrator by giving the same attitude back?
Ooh.
Sometimes a perpetrator will back down and diminish the nastiness. Knowing this, how much of this toxic behavior is just boundary testing? And I do understand that because
yep.
there are sometimes where you have to be a jerk jerk back to somebody for them. A bully only understands the bully, right?
So to that point, and this is where it's sort of know your bully. If you have a narcissist, criticizing them does not work. They go nuts. But if you have somebody who views it, and I think that's perfect, who views it as a sort of contest that we're all pushing and we're all getting ahead, in that case, the way I would put it is, if you are in a Lord of the Flies situation, and that at least that's how your jerk is defining it, the jerk in question, that's where you got to push. So one of my favorite examples, a woman wrote me, she worked for a former major. She called him a major, well,
like in
jerk.
The Army?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And he was always, she tried to be nice to him, and he was always pushing for dominance and taking things away from her. And finally, she stood up to him, and she realized that was the only thing he understood. I will warn all your listeners, though, be careful when you challenge a jerk, because if they have more power than you, they might fire you, and they might turn on you and become an enemy. So you got to be careful about temper tantrums and to be somewhat strategic about pushing back. But I agree with the caller. There are people who only understand that in situations where only that behavior is rewarded.
You're listening to Forum. We are talking to Bob Sutton. He's a professor of management, science, and engineering at Stanford. He's written a book on how to survive toxic personalities in the workplace. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Queen Akim. All right. So looks like the phone lines are lighting up here, and we have a call from Jody in Vallejo. Hey, Jody, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to just, you know, it's funny, the last comment about challenging somebody who is being, you know, awful to you. I actually did that at a job last year. And, you know, interestingly enough, they were, you know, they kind of chilled out for a little bit. And then my evaluation time came up and something told me to review my evaluation before I actually sat down with them. And I knew they were going to be leaving the job. So I actually worked with my union to make sure it was okay. I never had this problem before with a bad review, ever. I never got any bad marks, nothing. But there was this one incident that this supervisor and I had. And, you know, I let her know it was not okay for her to be talking to me that way and treating me that way. And I brought up all this other stuff from before, which I should have probably brought up a lot sooner, but I just didn't. And I was very direct. You know, I meant what I said, but I wasn't mean when I said it. However, I don't think it was received that way because come evaluation time under professional conduct, there was a comment about this incident. And what really upset me is that it was only what she perceived was my part of it. She didn't say, you know.
Yeah.
She didn't own her part. And so I refused to sign. And I actually drafted a whole.
Hey, Jody, I'm going to have to cut you off because you're cutting out here. But I think I sort of hear your question here, which is she confronts her supervisor. It seems like everything's going well, but then she got bit in the butt, I guess, when it came to be performance time.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does...
Well, to me, this is one of the classic situations where the evidence is that when we are involved with somebody we think who's a jerk, there's a lot of evidence that we don't take responsibility for our role in it. So in this case, the person who she criticized bit back without realizing that perhaps she was part of the jerk problem, too. And so it's really a serious problem that people don't accept responsibility. And that's why, to the extent that you have people who can give you an alternative view, you're in good shape. And
you know, you keep saying that, but it often strikes me that people who are really intransigent in this problem don't have those relationships, right? They don't have the person, you know, the spouse who can speak to them honestly. They sort of surround themselves with people who are either afraid of them or just don't bother being honest.
So if you are dealing with a certified jerk, that's where you've got to go into avoiding them, just enduring it, figure out some mental way to do it, or bringing them and fighting and bringing them down. So I hope we can transform them, but I actually agree with you completely that there are a lot of people in the world who are just not going to change. And if you're dealing with somebody like that, the challenge is to figure out how to escape them or how to bring them down. So thank you. That's a great point.
No, and let's talk about that a little because you have some tips here about you know, you're just sort of stuck in the situation. The job hasn't come along yet that you can jump to, because some of us just have to work in jobs that we don't really like, right, to make money. And you have some sort of, it's sort of almost self-help tricks here. And you're sort of smirking that I'm using that word self-help.
I own that.
So what are some things you can do while you're stuck in this situation?
Well, there's a whole bunch of ideas. I call these mind tricks or reframing based on cognitive behavioral therapy. View it as funny. Another thing to do, a very evidence-based method, is that if you're in a difficult situation, engage in what's called temporal distancing, imagining it's a year or two from now, and it doesn't hurt so much. Some great research from Berkeley has done this. One of my favorite approaches, one of my colleagues at Stanford uses this. He calls it the clinical method, which is that when he's in a meeting with a bad jerk who he deals with over and over again, he imagines he's a doctor who studies jerks and jerkdom, and he says to himself, "I'm so lucky to have such an amazing specimen and to see it so closely." And so there's different things you can do to detach from people emotionally who treat you like dirt. We mentioned this idea of earlier of when they go the Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high. To see yourself as actually a better person than the jerk in question.
We have just like a quick minute here, and I'm going to go to Jim in Santa Clara. Hey, Jim, you're on forum, and if you time for a really quick question.
Thanks. Love the comments there on how to deal with it. I worked for a company that had a toxic CEO, and it definitely led to a project that should never have proceeded. A lot of money wasted on that. The other comment I just wanted to raise real quickly is I worked around an actual psychopath who was very calculating and did not have a sense of conscience, it seems. I recommend a book called Confessions of a Psychopath. I learned a lot about this whole thing, which is a syndrome. And it helped me understand why the techniques I tried to
Okay, I'm going to cut you off here real quick so we could get a response from Bob here.
Well, there is a percentage of the population that's completely nuts, and apparently it's a little bit higher among senior executives. So, yes, you might get one. And in that case, my perspective is get out if you can't figure out a way to bring them down.
Well, you have been listening to Forum. Our guest today has been Bob Sutton. He has a new book out on how to deal with toxic personalities in the workplace. We can't tell you the title here, but if you go to our website, KQED, forum at kqed.org, you can find the name of that. Bob Sutton, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to talk.
And I'm Queen of Kim. You've been listening to Forum here on KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.